again. It feels like years since your journey north was cut short by the accident, though in truth, you've lost count of how many restless nights you've spent fighting for sleep in this dusty old cabin. The endless dark has invaded your mind. It consumes your every moment, and you can scarce remember the last time you saw daylight. This country is strange. Its sounds and smells, they all seem alien to you. And all that darkness. There's something about it that feels sinister and almost alive, as though some shadowy beast is watching over you as you lay on that old threadbare cot. It reaches out to you with inky black arms, digging its way deeper and deeper into your heart. And though your body strains against it, you can feel your will is beginning to falter. You make your way towards the dwindling fire, praying that a bit of warmth will keep the specter at bay. But it seems so far from your bed. You can feel the night's embrace pulling you back. The wind whispers into your ear, taunting you, begging you to give in, to close your eyes and join us in the abyss. The cold is suffocating, and as you desperately cast your gaze about the room for some bit of salvation, you see the familiar light of your fire go out for the last time. Ooh,
spooky, scary.
Hey.
Nice. Very good.
Welcome back to World Forge, everyone. Yeah, did you enjoy that, Piper?
I did. I feel like you got lots of inspiration from our cabin trips recently.
I certainly did. Yeah, we're playing around with some fun little spooky intros. I think that's a nice little bonus we want to give you, some little kind of writing prompts or little story intros or things like that. That's maybe something we'll do a little more for Halloween and holiday themed episodes like this, because I enjoy writing these.
It's super fun. Yeah. Hey, you did a good job. Well done.
I was well passed. Yes. I definitely have to give you a bit of credit for that, because you were kind of roasting me off air, but you were like, oh, I did a pretty cool one last week, Sam. You better bring it. So I was very motivated to do a good one here. So
good. I'm glad. Yeah. It was nice. 10 out of 10.
Absolutely. This week, as you may have guessed based on the intro, I think I sold it. I think this came across. Mm-hmm. We are talking about the fear of the dark.
Yeah.
As the second phobia we're going to be touching on as part of our month of Halloween frights and fun.
Exactly.
Fright Forge episode 2.
Hell yeah.
Is coming
Fright Forge,
at you.
Baby.
Yes.
Fright Forge.
So we're also, actually, kind of excitingly, we're recording on some new equipment this week. I think that's really fun. So
ooh,
I just
so
want to
fun.
Talk about that. That's like
new
really
equipment.
Yeah, that's exciting to me, I think. So if you hear, if we sound a little sexier this week, that might be part of why.
Yeah, this is Sam got this from sexyequipment.com.
Yes, exactly.
Don't Google that.
No.
You'll find
no.
sad things.
I get all of my microphones from adamandeve.com.
Nice. Yeah. Oh my God. They double as many other things.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, we've got a very, very fun topic for you here this week. Mm-hmm. Nyctophobia is actually the technical term for this phobia.
Yeah.
And it's a good one. It's another really relatable one. I think a lot of people can certainly, kind of connect to this sort of fear of the unknown is really what I sort of feel like a fear of the dark is.
Yeah.
Do you have any personal experience or any thoughts about this, Piper?
Well, definitely. In fact, I was going to say I experienced a little bit of it's nyctophobia.
Nyctophobia.
Nyctophobia. Yeah. I experienced a little bit of it today, actually, because we went out to this cool, spooky, abandoned, like, facility. It's like probably a big processing plant of some kind.
Something like that.
We went there to take some spooky pictures, and we found that we could get inside these enormous like concrete domes that used to be used to like hold something, who knows, bodies maybe.
Or someone.
Or
yeah,
someone.
Exactly.
And it was kind of creepy to walk in there because there was some light, but also I had that thought in the back of my mind. I'm like, what if suddenly like there's a big slam and the entrance is blocked and I'm trapped inside?
Yeah.
Like that would be horrifying.
I'll try and have some of those photos ready to go up this week along with the episode, because I think they were really, really cool the way they turned out. We've got some really awesome shots. We walk into this big dome and it's literally just pitch black except for this single beam of light coming in through an open window. And we got all these awesome pictures of, you know, you and our friends that were with us, that were doing photos with us, just kind of standing just somewhat, you know, barely illuminated and then surrounded by this like infinite black. It's really cool. And you can see your shadow, like, you know, it's like a mile long.
Out.
It's so cool. Yeah. I was really happy with that. It was really fun. So
it was fun.
Yeah. I'll try and have those ready as another little tidbit for you, another little source of inspiration.
Very nice.
Yeah.
The other thing I can think about being afraid of the dark, and I'm sure many can relate, but was just the experience of having to go from, well, either from the basement up upstairs to down into the basement, because we had this frustrating light switch situation where there was a switch at the top of the stairs and a switch at the bottom of the stairs. And if you flipped it one way, suddenly it couldn't work. You had to like run up the stairs to make the light turn on or off or whatever. And so I remember many a time like having to switch off the light at the bottom of the stairs and then sprinting up there and being like, don't look behind you. Don't look behind you. Don't look behind you. There's definitely going to be something scary hiding in the shadows if you do.
That's why Piper's broken her ankle 7 times.
Yeah.
Well, because clambering up those stairs.
No, that, I don't know. It's the idea of, I think what's so scary about the dark is even if there's nothing there, your mind is going to project horrifying things into the shadows.
Oh, absolutely.
It will twist whatever obscure shape it sees into something that seems threatening. And that probably stems from like survivalism of, you know, our ancient ancestors.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very spooky.
Well, I'm sure it's, we talk about this a lot of time, how the second they show a monster in a monster movie, it becomes less scary.
Exactly.
Right? Because it could never be as terrifying as, you know, the scariest thing you can imagine, right? It's always going to be like, okay, well, it's got teeth. It's what, you know, I know what it is now.
Yeah.
So that removes some element of it. You can at least try to defend yourself against it, right? Whereas if you don't know what's out there, there's nothing you can really do to prepare yourself. You have no plan of attack. You have no way to steel yourself against an enemy that may or may not even be there.
Exactly.
I think that's terrifying.
Yeah. So, very, very spooky.
Yeah. When I was a kid, actually, so our house was a split level. So our basement wasn't really like a basement. It was like garden view. So it was, you know, halfway underground. And then there was just like a window that was like ground level. Right. But when we moved into the house, the basement was unfinished. So it was just beams up there and then a concrete floor. And there are all these kind of spooky noises that happen down there. And, you know, when I was a kid, I was kind of like, I don't want to go down here all the time by myself. And I think this is an adorable little secret that I'm going to share with you about me. I used to sing from The King and I when they're like, whenever I feel afraid,
I whistle
a happy tune.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mom taught me to do that. And so that was what I would do when I'd go downstairs.
That's so sweet.
Yeah.
Way to go, Amy.
I
love it.
that's a little piece of advice for anybody who's experiencing the willies when they go into their spooky basement. Sing a cute little song to yourself and it might stave off that fear just for a moment, for long enough to, you know, grab the batteries or whatever you needed to get out of the basement closet.
Well, the trick that I would always use is if for whatever reason I had to like turn back and look into the darkness or whatever, or if I had to enter a scary space, my thinking was, well, I think I'm going to turn around and there's going to be something scary there and they are waiting to scare me, but I bet they're not expecting me to jump around and scare them. So sometimes if I had to turn or like if I had to enter a spooky place, I would maybe go, wah! Like I would turn around and try to be like, I gotcha! Like try to scare whatever might be scaring me.
I don't think that's a bad strategy, honestly. You know, it's like whenever you see like a little bug or whatever, or like an animal, you know, the parental figure would be like, well, they're probably more scared of you than you are of them, you know?
Right.
Like that makes sense, right? I don't know if that necessarily holds true for, you know, thieves
and monsters.
Muggers and monsters or whatever, but you know what? Worth a shot, right? Better than going out there totally defenseless.
Exactly.
Right? I love it. I really like the dark now. I don't really one of my favorite things to do actually at night, even just in our apartment, is to walk around using just a flashlight to illuminate instead of I don't know, that feels really cool to me. I feel like I'm an explorer in some old tomb or something. So sometimes when I'm, you know, up at night and I have to go get something, instead of turning on the lights, I'll just grab a flashlight and I'll navigate around that way. And I like to dramatically cast the flashlight beam around.
Ooh, you're looking to get spooked. You want
to
see scary shadows.
Spooked. Yeah, I love it. I think it's so much fun. I do it at our cabin sometimes. I like walking around in the woods. I'll take a little jaunt out there. It's fun. So maybe I'm a little bit more of a thrill seeker.
I was going to say, Sam is tempting all these shadow demons to reveal themselves.
Come at me, shadow demons, please. I would love to just sit down and have a little chat with you, you know? That'd
nice.
Be fun.
Very nice.
But shadow demons and, you know, anti-mugger self-defense tactics aside, we do have a topic this week that we should get into that is very fun to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I think we, you know, I have a couple of cool sort of sources of inspiration from some different games and stories and things like that I want to talk about. So I'll just jump right into mine.
Go for it. Give us one.
The first one that I want to talk about, I think is this is probably going to be a really popular, well-known one. It's Amnesia, The Dark Descent, which was a game that came out in, I want to say like, around like 2010 or something like that, 2010, 2011. And it's sort of like a Lovecraftian kind of horror game. And they have this really interesting mechanic where you're chased throughout the game by this invisible monster, right? And you have to go through this, you know, this sort of manor and solve all these puzzles. And it's, you know, very, very dark in the manor, and you can't really see very far ahead of you. So you can turn on a light, but whenever you have your light on, I think you have a little lighter or a torch or something, the monster can see you. And so it comes closer. And so you have to sort of be balancing. If you stay in the dark, there's like an insanity meter that you slowly kind of go insane.
I love that.
And then you have to turn the light on, but you can't leave the light on too long because then the monster will find you. So it's
very cool.
It's such a well done mechanic. It works so well and it's really spooky. It's full of great jump scares. There's a really cool section of the game where you go into this room that is you also have to be quiet so it can't hear you, right? And you go into this room that it's like semi-flooded, and there's all these boxes that you have to jump between. Mm-hmm. And you can see when the monster is walking through the water because you can see, you know, the ripples, and you can kind of hear it. And if you fall in the water, you'll make noise and splash around, and the mm-hmm. monster will hear you. So you have to jump from box to box, and it's this really, really tense moment.
Dude, I was going to say, it sounds like not great if you have a lot of anxiety.
No, it's terrible if you have anxiety. If you're an anxious person, it's stay away, steer clear. But if you are, you know, somebody who likes being spooked, it's an excellent spooky game to play in the dark. It's so much fun. I definitely recommend it. It goes on sale on Steam all the time. I think actually they just gave away the sequel or the expansion on the Epic Games store for free. So, or they might be doing it soon. So yeah,
cool.
Look out for those. Those are some really fun games. That's Amnesia of the Dark Descent. And I think Machine for Pigs is the name of the expansion, which is just like another adventure.
Awesome.
In there. So what do you got for us, Piper?
Well, my first inspiration that I'm drawing from is a movie that I actually have not seen all the way through. I've seen clips of it before, and actually it was shown to me during some kind of like health class in middle school.
Okay.
Because it has this really intense like jump scare moment in it, and it got everyone in the class. We're all like, whoa, when the teacher's like, hey, gotcha. Anyway, back to teaching you about why sex is a thing and stuff like that.
But because it's scary.
But so the movie is called Wait Until Dark, and it's from 1967. Ooh. And it stars Audrey Hepburn. And she plays a blind woman who gets involved with these violent criminals who, for whatever reason, believe that she has this very valuable thing in her possession. And her husband leaves, and she's all alone, and she's trapped in this house with this guy who's played by, what do I have written here? Alan Arkin.
Oh, okay.
He plays the violent criminal that's trying to get, I think it's drugs that he's after. And he thinks that it's hidden in the stall that she has.
Yeah, blind people love drugs. Everyone knows that.
Well, what's so fun about it is, so he manages to trap her inside her own home, and now she's here with this guy, and she decides that the way that she can defend herself and even out the playing field is that she has to cast him also into darkness. And so she goes around and starts smashing every single light.
That's cool.
It's really cool.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of intense cat and mouse kind of back and forth moments of she'll get the upper hand for a bit, but then there's so many scenes where she's there and he's right behind her and she's blind, so she doesn't know it. And
I like this a lot.
Yeah.
I think there was a movie that came out a few years ago that was kind of similar to this that had it's got the guy that you really like from Avatar, who plays the general guy.
Yes, except
he plays a blind man. Yeah. And he's ex-military, and mm-hmm. he's trying to beat up a bunch of kids or something who get stuck in his house.
Yeah, I thought that movie was advertised really well because these kids break into this old man's home. And so I'm kind of you had this coming. He should kill you all. Yeah. But then, he traps them in there and he hunts them, although he's the one who's blind. It actually has a really creepy ending. It's very messed up.
Yeah.
It's
like a horror movie. It has to be
he's definitely not a good guy. He deserves to get his house broken into. it's really interesting. I think it's called Don't Breathe.
Yeah,
because he follows them by listening for them.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Creepy ending, but very good. So yeah,
I like this. So both of these examples, I think, have there's this cool emphasis on other senses, right?
Mm-hmm,
that you know, the sound and the light and things like that can be sort of signals to your presence. And I think that would be a really interesting thing if we're talking about bringing this into a role playing setting. Imagine you're in a cave and you know there's something in there that you cannot kill it. So every action you take has to be accompanied by, a sneak check. And every time I could see there being, maybe you could make kind of a little sliding meter that every time you make a sound, the meter gets a little bit closer to you getting caught. And so you only have so many mistakes you can make.
Ooh, I like that.
So, yeah, I think that would be a fun thing that would really add a lot of tension to a situation, and it would create a kind of an interaction that it's not really just combat and it's not really just, you know, like conversation role play. It kind of fits in the middle here. And I like that. Trying to specifically prevent combat.
Yeah. Another interesting technique that could be used in a scenario like that is this thing that I first heard about it when we were listening to the campaign Star Wars podcast.
Yeah.
When they did their kind of spooky episode, and you set up a Jenga tower.
Yeah,
and every
yeah.
time you like make an action, you remove a piece, and if the tower topples, then, you know, the monster finds you, or
yeah.
you know, and somebody you dies die, or, and yeah. things like that. Yeah. And it's just like a fun way to add kind of yeah, that sense of
that tension. It's there's
tension.
Always you're going to fail eventually, right?
Exactly.
Like you can see your failure situation. Just it's laughing at you. It's taunting you the whole time. Yeah.
Wasn't there something where they got really close to actually setting a world record
yeah.
by
well,
accident?
They were saying, they were like, how have we played this Jenga game for this long?
And like, it
was
hadn't
like
fallen
an entire
over.
Episode
yeah.
of them. Yeah. Flying, not falling over. Yeah. I wish I could remember the name of that game, but it's. I think a fairly well-known game, and it's meant for, yeah, kind of horror one-shots, because the idea is that everybody's going to die eventually, and it's just see how long you can last.
Yeah.
I think it's really, really cool. I love that tension.
That's awesome. What else you got?
I've got – so the next one that I have here, another, I think, kind of a classic horror example is the Silent Hill series. Mm-hmm. And I mention that specifically because kind of like in, you know, in some of these other examples, you are – at least in Silent Hill 2, I remember, you have a little flashlight that you stick on your – you know, on your like lapel or something like that. So it's always shining forward. And in a lot of places, you can only really see in that flashlight beam. Mm-hmm. So as you're exploring around, you can see about 5 to 10 feet in front of you when the flashlight is on. And then as soon as you turn away, wherever the flashlight's not pointing, it's just pitch black. And there's all these really spooky kind of hallways that you're running down this hallway and you don't really know what's going to be more than 5 feet ahead of you. And I think it accomplishes that really, really well.
That's awesome.
I remember that series is one of my favorite series when I was younger, and me and a few of my friends, we'd go down in his basement and we would, you know, turn off all the lights and we would all kind of huddle together.
Oh, spooky.
And we would watch it. Yeah, we would watch him play Silent Hill together. And we did that for the first couple games, and it was always a blast.
That's awesome.
You know, some people might laugh that, you know, it's kind of like a clunky old, you know, classic style survival horror game with, it's got weird like tank controls, and it's got, you know, a lot of tank controls being where like you push up to move forward and then you move left and right, like left and right on the stick, like turns you. Mm-hmm. So no matter what direction you're facing, up is forward. So it's like weird kind of janky controls, and it doesn't really hold up well now, probably. Like you might pick it up and play it and be like, oh, this is goofy and silly. I can't be scared by this, right? But I have so many fond memories of that series.
That's awesome.
I love it. Yeah.
I think it helps to really immerse yourself the way that you guys did.
Yeah, totally.
Because it really puts you in the moment.
And that's another thing that I think would be kind of cool to do in a D&D game is, you know, talking about how to actually incorporate darkness as a mechanic in your games, you know, especially when, you know, if we were talking about this with Aaron, one of our DMs recently, how basically every race
in
5e has night vision of some kind for the most part. And like, if you're human or something and you don't have it, there are some classes that can give it to you. You know, there's ways for the darkness is very like trivialized essentially, right? So unless it's like magical darkness or mm-hmm. something like that. But I think kind of taking that to kind of a meta level and say, you know, if you're playing in a room that has like a dimmer switch, you know, do like I was saying, you have to sneak around, and every time you fail, you dim the lights a little bit more.
Oh, that's
and so
fun. I like that.
The actual area that you're playing in becomes kind of spookier. And if you want to, you know, get into that ambience, I think that'd be a really fun way to do it. You know, maybe have like a spooky soundtrack that every time you fail, the lights go down and the soundtrack goes up. So
very
it
cool.
gets like scarier and darker every time. And yeah, that'd be cool. Or maybe, you know, give all your players blindfolds and say every time you roll the dice, you have to be blindfolded. And if you miss the little dice arena or something, it's an automatic failure or
interesting.
Something. Finding ways to actually challenge your players would be very cool.
I wonder if there's a way to incorporate like a Ouija board into a D&D session.
That would be awesome.
Like
that'd
how cool.
So cool.
Like, I'm seeing like, you know, playing by candlelight and having a Ouija board set up and using that to solve some sort of mystery in your game. That'd be really cool.
I would love to do that. If any of you have any cool ideas about how to do that, we would love to hear them. Please reach out to us on Twitter at WorldForgePod. That would be so awesome if you've ever done anything like this, or if you know a game that does something kind of similar to it, you know, or using tarot cards or any of the sort of spooky, you know, kind of accoutrement of Halloween. That would be a really, really interesting thing to hear about, I think.
Yeah.
So,
Fun fact, I actually, me and my good friend Shannon, who was on the podcast one time, we made our own Ouija board. Which we felt, because the fact that we made it ourselves, we thought, we're like, this definitely can channel serious energy. Sure. It's not like a Hasbro game that we bought at the store. We made our own, and we like found this old cutting board, and that's what we used. We painted everything on it. It looked so great. Yeah,
it was always so funny that it was Hasbro that unlocked the mysteries of communication with the other side, right?
Yeah, crazy.
not priests or scientists or anything like that, but Hasbro. I guess it just goes to show, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover. So, you never know.
I had also written down this conversation that we've had with Aaron about how every race has dark vision except for humans.
Yes.
And so I think if you are going to do a session like the one we're going to create today, you need to remove that. I think that's the first thing that needs to happen.
Yeah.
Is that everyone has to have like a curse or a spell placed upon them so their dark vision no longer works.
I like that. Or maybe even just blinded entirely. You know?
Like so if like throw acid in their faces.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're through some, you know, DM hand waving means, your party is denied sight for the duration of this adventure, right? And however you choose to realize that in game, you know, like we said, maybe make your players wear blindfolds whenever they roll or something like that. Mm-hmm. I think that would be an interesting thing to do.
Yeah, definitely. So I think my next example that I want to pull from is one of my favorite horror movies of all time is The Conjuring. I really, really love that film. Mm-hmm. And I think the best scene in the whole movie is the scene where after the mother goes downstairs and then she gets trapped there and she's hiding up at the top of the staircase and she's lighting matches one at a time and they're burning down towards her fingers as she's trying to like search the darkness. I feel like if we're talking about this idea of total blackness versus a little bit of dark, like a little bit of light source that you have, I think a little light source is kind of scarier, if only because it will cast shadows and it feels you can see the darkness around you.
For sure.
Whereas if you're in total darkness, I feel like after a little while you might just adjust to that and you're like, this is just my reality now.
Yeah, okay.
That scene though where she's there and she's lighting the matches and then suddenly like from the shadows behind her these creepy arms come out and they do this clapping, which is like so well established early on in the movie.
Yeah.
This messed up game that these kids play, of course. Like, oh yeah, we're gonna play hide and clap, where they go off and it's kind of like hide and seek, but everyone has to make clapping sounds and one person's blindfolded and you follow the sounds to go and find people. It's pretty good.
I like that. The idea of like the lack of clarity being made so clear, you know what I mean? Like you can see how little you can see.
Well, exactly. Right?
Like I think that's a good like demonstration of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like it's like what we touched on before. It's like if you are given just a shred of light and then the shadows created from that, your mind will populate those shadows with demons and monsters.
Absolutely.
And horrifying things.
I think that's awesome. Yeah. That's a really cool example.
Yeah.
So the next one that I want to talk about here, this is a game that I have a lot of video games on this one actually this week, because I think there's a lot of cool uses of darkness in games. Mm-hmm. There's a game that came out. It came out on the same day as the original Red Dead Redemption game. So the funny thing, it's called Alan Wake. The thing that's kind of funny about that for me is I went to the midnight launch for that game, not realizing that Red Dead Redemption was coming out the same day. Mm-hmm. And I waited in line for that. This was back in like, I don't know, it would have been like 2012 or something like that probably, right? And I get up to the counter at GameStop or wherever I was, and I ask, the guy's like, all right, did you get the special edition or the the standard edition? And I was like, oh, there's a special edition of Alan Wake? And the guy's like, what? What's Alan Wake? And I'm like, the game I'm here for. And I realized I was the only person there for that game. Aww, everybody else was there for Red Dead Redemption. But it's a really cool game. It's very like Twin Peaks-esque, and it's kind of got this it has this interesting sort of narrative format. So you play as this guy named Alan Wake. He's a novelist who he and his wife, they go up to the Pacific Northwest so that he can go to this little kind of cabin retreat and finish the book that he's writing, right?
Oh, it's like Misery.
Yeah, yeah. And the book that he's writing, it starts to come true, basically. Cool. And so you keep finding pages that he hasn't written yet.
Ooh.
And they're like hints of what's kind of to come.
I like that.
And the way that they sort of like weaponize light in a really interesting way. So the way the game works is you always have a flashlight in one hand and then a gun or, like a traditional weapon in the other hand. And the monsters that attack you, they're like wrapped in this darkness. And before you can shoot them to stop them, you have to cast a flashlight beam on them and like wipe away the darkness. And that's
very
the
cool.
only thing that makes them vulnerable.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's really fun, and it's got this kind of interesting sort of quirky sort of, it's kind of funny, but it's also kind of spooky, and it's a really cool game. It got taken off of Steam a few years ago, but I think it is on the Epic Games Launcher. So yeah, if you want to check that out, that would be a really another great source of just finding cool ways to use darkness, you know, have darkness makes your enemies invulnerable. They can only be harmed in the light or something like that. I think it would be a fun thing to experiment with.
I love that. And it leads well into my next, I think, final example that I want to share. And that is, I mean, it's Halloween season, so I have to bring it back to Over the Garden Wall.
Of course.
But I love the way that for most of the show, the beast is just a silhouette. You only see his outline because he's so cloaked in darkness, like what you just described, apart from his little glowing eyes.
Yes.
And so there are a few moments that are really fun at the end, like the finale. So spoiler, go watch it now and then come back if you haven't seen it yet. But where at one point, I think Wirt has the lantern and he shines it at the beast and it reveals for a split second what the beast actually looks like.
Yeah.
And he's like made up of like this weird gnarled flesh that has a thousand faces all over it.
It looks like muscly kind of, and it's got like screaming horrified mouths kind of wrapped up in it.
Yeah, no, it's really a lot. Cool. It's really gross. Yeah. But I think one of the other moments that uses darkness really well in that big finale that I love is they're kind of combating, like verbally, like, you know, going after the beast and he's over it.
Wait a minute. No, that's stupid.
Yeah, right? And I love how at that one moment he just gets fed up and he does this thing where he kind of like wriggles or whatever.
Yeah, it's
like
big shudder kind of.
Yeah, this
up.
And then suddenly all the light is sucked from the surrounding like area where they're standing in until only there's the light of the lantern left. Like there's no more like moon or stars or anything. It's just them and the lantern light.
Cool.
And he says to Greg and Wirt, he's like, "Are you ready to see true darkness?" And it's so cool. And then like Wirt has his little comeback and he's like, "Are you?" And it's like great. Yeah.
I love that. God, yeah, Over the Garden Wall, we cannot recommend that enough. It's so phenomenal. It's just so dense with cool references to, you know, kind of classical fairy tale type stories and tropes and like classic animation. And we love it so much. Early Rec Room, go check out Over the Garden Wall. It's incredible. We should do an episode somehow tied into that.
I think.
That would be really fun.
Yeah, definitely. Do you have one more?
I love that. I do have one more. So I actually, similar to how I can never go an episode without talking about Lord of the Rings, I can scarce ever go an episode without talking about Dark Souls in some way.
I was hoping you would.
Yes. So in Dark Souls 1, the Tomb of Giants is such a cool area because basically the whole place, unless you get this kind of rare item called the Skull Lantern, or if you go really out of your way to get the Sunlight Maggot, which is a helm that you wear that emits light, the whole place is basically just pitch black except for these little colored pebbles that you can drop around the area. And they're kind of scattered about, and sometimes they're put in places that can help you navigate, that kind of show a path, and other times they're intentionally put in a way that they will lead you to fall off a cliff and die or something like that. And it's really cool that you'll just be walking through and suddenly 2 feet in front of you, which is about the extent of how far you can see, a giant like skeleton will just appear out of the darkness.
That's
and you literally
so cool.
See, you know, the light sort of it's like you're like 3D printing a skeleton from the face forward, you know, they crawl
that.
Around on their hands and knees.
Ooh.
Like a dog or something. They're very inhuman and kind of spooky and foreign, and you can just bump into them and suddenly you're, you know, literally face to face with them. It's so cool.
That's awesome.
It's also a very, very satisfying area to watch people speedrun because it's actually really quick to get through it. You can get through that area in like 15 seconds if you know the pattern, because you can just jump in just the right places to go hop, 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 and then end up right at the last bonfire before the, you know, before the Gravelord Nito fight.
Very cool.
So I love that area, and there's kind of a history in Dark Souls games of using darkness kind of like that. And I'm actually so here's a little bit of kind of development lore about Dark Souls 2. Dark Souls 2, it was originally intended to have darkness and your torchlight as like a primary mechanic in the game. And the early footage that was shown of it showed an area that was kind of like this, like the Tomb of Giants. So you basically had to choose between having a shield in your left hand and being safer, or having a torch in your left hand and being able to see. Mm-hmm. And it's this really fascinating trade-off. But about a year before the game came out, actually, I think even less than that, they ended up scrapping the whole thing and starting over, and they took away all of those mechanics. But you can still see some of those in action if you look at some of the early footage that was released of it. And I really, really wish they had gone with that mechanic. I think that would have been so cool to have something like that in the game. But, I think there's mods on the PC version that can sort of simulate that a little bit. I know there's a mod for Skyrim that does that I love called Realistic Darkness, that you pretty much have to carry a torch around all the time to be able to see anything. I love mechanics like that. It's really, really cool.
Very fun.
It actually, that mechanic even inspired, there's a Dark Souls challenge runner that I watch on Twitch a lot named Lobos Jr., who he's beaten Dark Souls like literally thousands of times. Like, he's beaten it every which way. He's done, he's the kind of guy who does the thing where like you beat it with a DDR pad or something like that instead of a normal controller. He's done all kinds of crazy challenges. And one of the ones he did for Dark Souls 2, he called it the Olympic torch bearer run or something like that, where you have to light a torch at the beginning of the game and you can't let that torch go out at any point. So he's holding, and the torches have timers on them. They only last for 5 minutes. So he has to keep picking up new torches and he has to go from fire to fire. And if the torch goes out, he loses and has to start over.
That's cool.
It's really cool.
I like that a lot.
I love the way that people find different ways to experience games like this by kind of bending the rules or creating new rules for themselves, and Dark Souls has a lot of room for that, so
yeah, absolutely.
absolutely,
dude. I think this is a really good way to sort of lay down the groundwork. And if you're ready, I think we should start making our own little story.
I absolutely am, and I think something that we should definitely be focusing on as we do this is, like we talked about, finding ways to engage other senses and finding ways to use darkness mechanically. So maybe if we, if we don't even necessarily end up with a fully fleshed out story, if we have some interesting ideas for how to utilize some of these fun things, like blindfolding your players or dimming the lights as you, as you play, I think that's what I kind of want to bring this week. So let's definitely be keeping that in mind and let's get going. Do you have a random prompt word for us?
Let me see what I can muster up here. All right, Sam, our randomly generated word is brain.
Brain.
Not okay. Brian, but brain.
So I'm immediately thinking of Baldur's Gate 3. The beta just went live here, and it went into early access. And part of the story of that, at least from the early trailers that I saw for it, are a mind flayer who puts a little worm in your brain, and he's kind of taking control over all these people. So, that could be an interesting enemy to kind of skulk about in the dark, is, a giant squid-faced guy who can control your brain. Or, another direction is, zombies eat brains, or there are even monsters that are literally just giant brains on, on claws, that like spider claws that can walk around. Those are a few of my first ideas. What do you got?
Yeah, Piper? I would like to play more with the idea of someone like messing with your mind, because we've got this whole thing about, because our topic is a fear of the dark.
Yeah.
And I almost like the idea that maybe like the start of this adventure is someone inflicting you with a fear of the dark.
Oh, I like that.
It's like a curse. Like, you were fine before, but they've now given you this, like, kind of what I did in our, when I was running our recent D&D session, I had the touch of fear, where suddenly, like, the person is rendered super vulnerable because they're just incredibly afraid.
And my poor little frog, Renee.
Yes, I ruined your little frog. But he's on the path to recovery, hopefully.
Yes, he is,
But I like the idea that maybe, some sort of evil individual, maybe probably the antagonist of this the session that we want to create, or the story, they have infected you with a fear of the darkness.
I really like that idea, because I like the idea of, like we talked about, as soon as you see the enemy and you kind of understand what they're about, they become much less scary, right? If we have an enemy that we don't really know who or what exactly they are, because they keep going into our brain and just flipping switches, right? So even if we do see them, we're like, is this what we're really seeing? Is this what's, actually in front of me? Or is this an illusion? Is this some kind of a, am I just like, crazy? Am I paranoid? Did I really hear that? Did I really see that? That's a really, really fun type of enemy that isn't just a thing that hits you really hard. Or just, casts a spell on you. It kind of turns your mind into your own enemy. It turns it against you.
Exactly. I think this threat needs to be mostly psychological.
Okay.
So cool. I like the idea too that our party, or our main people, they have also been they have to be like secluded. So they can't like interact with a bunch of other people to be like, help me. Like something's happening. They have to kind of be off by themselves.
Yeah. Okay.
In like a secluded space where there's going to be lots and lots of darkness for which them to fear.
Which is, of course, easy to do now. You know, a lot of people are playing D&D remotely here. So I think that, you know, outside of game, you can easily isolate your players to sort of enhance that. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, maybe building a little bit on this mechanic we talked about of, you know, forcing our players to blindfold themselves or whatever. If we have this entity who's cursing you, who's constantly just robbing you of your senses, you know, maybe once it's, you know, this would be very easy to do over a Skype call or something. If the DM has like a map up on the screen or something, just take away the map. You can't see it anymore. Mm-hmm. Or have all of your players have little earplugs, or you can just, you say, hey, you lose your sense of sound. You have to mute your audio. You can't hear what we're saying.
Oh, that's fun.
Anymore.
I like that.
Yeah. I think that would be a really cool thing to do, and to just sort of cycle in and out of, you know, these different senses that you're losing and regaining kind of randomly. That would be very, very fun to do.
Very cool. I like that a whole lot. One of the random ideas that I had earlier that I think would be really cool, and I don't know if this is something that is related to the individual who delivered the curse, or this is just something that also exists as a tangent to that. But I love the idea of there being like evil things that can move through the darkness like something can swim through water.
Yeah.
So it can like swim through darkness, and it's not exactly, I'm picturing sort of like a smoke monster or something that like has, I don't know, it almost kind of swims through the air, except only when there's like shadows and darkness.
In 3.5, there was a rogue prestige class that was really, really cool. They probably have something similar to this in 5e. Jared or the guys from Monsters Multiclass, get at us. Let us know if there's something like this that exists. I'm sure you guys have your finger on the pulse of that. But it was a class called the Shadow Dancer. And the thing that they could do that I thought was so cool, I always wanted to play a Shadow Dancer class, and I never ended up playing a rogue long enough to have all the prerequisite skills and all that to actually get to be able to play one. But they have this ability where essentially they can just teleport like up to a certain distance as long as they're in shadows, like Nightcrawler style.
Very nice.
Which is so cool to me. You know, imagine, you know, you just wait for nighttime and then you can anime style, like, sorry kid, nothing personal, like warp behind somebody and stab them in the back or whatever. Yeah. I think that would be a really, really cool thing to be able to do too. And, you know, turning that into something a monster does instead. Yeah. That they can slither around like a snake in the, you know, in the darkness, like a creature made of shadows. And maybe that could be our antagonist, is this sort of shadowy specter that maybe they can only hurt you like when you can't see them or something like that. So whether it's in total darkness or if it's in daylight, if they take away your sight, then, you know, to you, essentially the whole world is in darkness, right? So they can freely, you know, move around and interact with you. Or maybe it's that you can only be harmed when, you know, it's dark, when you're standing in shadow or something. So they can, you know, obviously wait until nighttime and just like stab you or whatever. Or they can cast your entire world into darkness. And then if you're blind, then you're fair game. You're completely vulnerable to them at all times, because, you know, that would be sort of the kind of fairy tale version of it, is like, well, being blind is the equivalent of living in darkness. So it's the same thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is making me think of, actually, one of the things that I do like from Doctor Who is the stone angels.
Yeah. The weeping angels.
Weeping angels, where they say, you know, don't blink, because when you're not looking at them, they can move towards you.
Yes,
but if you have your eyes on them, they can't. So that's kind of giving me those vibes.
For sure.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Is that something we should continue to flesh out? I think this is a cool direction to go for the villain. If, you know, maybe they were originally like a powerful wizard that through some experiment of theirs, their body was destroyed and they live on as just this like massive darkness or something. Like mass of darkness, not massive darkness. I mean, maybe they're massive, who knows, but I think that would be kind of neat. And so they kind of the evil, like, you know, the darkness sort of wrapped around their heart and turned them into this like terrible force that they just want to make everybody, you know, have to be plunged into the darkness like them. I think that's kind of a cool motivation.
I like that idea, because there were a lot of things that I was thinking about when brainstorming for our inspiration section of the different creatures and characters who can only exist in the darkness. And one example that I did not give, but I'll bring it up now, is Tim Curry's The Prince of Darkness from the movie Legend, which is a big favorite of mine. And his whole thing is he cannot exist in daylight, but he can exist if there's like, you know, by firelight, that's fine for him.
Yeah.
And so his goal is to plunge the world above into an eternal darkness so that way he can go up onto the surface and bring all of his little demons and things with him and essentially take over.
So,
and he accomplishes this by killing the last unicorns, because then the sun will never rise again, for they are the bringers of light and joy and innocence and all of those things. So I like, if it sounds kind of like where you were kind of leaning with that, is that this villain also is aiming to plunge the world in darkness.
Definitely. I think that's the motivation there is very clear. It makes total sense for this villain, right? So we don't necessarily need their goals or their motivations to be really abstract. I think it's honestly better for an enemy most of the time if their goals are very simple.
Right.
The way they accomplish those goals might become very complicated, but they want something that's like, okay, I understand why you want that. I hope you understand that I'm going to try and stop you.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what I'm starting to see, like the seeds for the setup of this adventure would be that, of course, as is, I don't know, as it must be, the one person who is chosen to essentially take on this great evil is someone who has a fear of the darkness.
Oh, cool.
And it's very much like, no, you've chosen the wrong person. Yeah. I'm not right for this. I can hardly be in a room unless there's a big fire that's blazing. I cannot go and defeat this thing.
What a little nerd.
But for whatever reason, they're the one who has to do it.
I like it. And okay, so I also think we should maybe establish how the villain here is going to wipe out all of the light, or how they're going to plunge the world in the darkness. And here, my first thought here, I'm actually thinking back to one of my favorite game series. I think I've definitely used this as a Rec Room recommendation on the podcast before, is the Golden Sun series. The first two games on the Game Boy Advance are some of my favorite, 16-bit era role-playing games of all time. They're so good. And the story of those games is that there are these four lighthouses, one for each element, dotted all over the world. And if the light of those lighthouses, I haven't played these games in a long time. I remember the first one I beat like 20 times or something. I played it over and over and over again, but I don't remember it as well now. So I might be getting the story a little mixed up. So don't, you know, at me, Camelot Studios, if I mess up the story of your game. But, basically each of these lighthouses, they housed like all the magical power of that element. And if you lit the lighthouse, it like sent that magic out into the world. So it made it easier for people to use it. Right. And I kind of like the idea of sort of similar to that. Maybe there is a lighthouse that literally houses all of, you know, like when the sun sets, it goes to rest at this lighthouse. And if you knock down the lighthouse or destroy the lighthouse, or if you put the light out or something like that while the sun is there, you can trap it there forever and it will never be able to come daylight again. So
very cool.
You would have to race to find this lighthouse and then stop this shadowy creature from, you know, from snuffing out the light.
I like that a lot. That gives me vibes of kind of like old fables and legends that you would hear, like the idea that you can capture and snuff out the sun.
For sure.
Like it's not just a burning ball of gas millions of miles away. It's something in the sky that with the right angle, you could pluck it from the heavens.
You could lasso the sun and pull it down.
Exactly. And
like
actually,
that,
it makes me think of, I did recommend this or mention it in a previous episode, but the movie, the animated movie Moon.
Yeah.
That is something that villain is attempting to do as well. He wants to capture the sun, and he does for a while. He grabs it and he kind of puts out its light and he turns it into this like lump of coal, and he, and also the new moon guardian loses the moon for a while, so their world is also put into this blackness.
Cool.
And it's like how they, you know, bring back light once more.
I think
that's really fun. It feels like a very classic kind of ancient quest.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, I think keeping the motivation and the goals really simple, but then there's so much room to, you know, have kind of weird twisty plans and things like that.
You know what,
in
I think
that
would,
story
I think a good way to start off this adventure would to be with, we should begin with the villain achieving their goal.
Oh yeah, totally.
So yeah, what happens is everybody thinks everything is totally fine, but suddenly maybe no one knew that he was doing this or she was doing this, but our bad guy has gotten hold of the sun and they've put it out, and now like everything plunges into darkness, and that's what sets the adventure into motion.
I like it.
A party coming together and saying, we have to return the light.
I think this would be something that, you know, maybe even when the story starts, this happened like years ago and people have been trying to find what, you know, we've all been suffering in the darkness for years now. And finally, a group of, you know, the warriors of light have banded together to go and make an attempt. And maybe they're not the first ones to go and do it. I'm sure that, you know, group after group of adventurers would go and try to bring the sun back, and every single one of them falls.
Yeah.
I think An interesting sort of, you know, like having an opening kind of cutscene here, right? Maybe there's this group of monks that are like the lighthouse tenders, right? And this shadowy creature goes to the lighthouse, kills them all, and the camera would kind of open on a scene like panning up of all of these dead monks strewn about the stairs leading up to the lighthouse, and he would go up this kind of winding staircase up to the top, and you see just one shadowy figure slowly trudging up the stairs.
I like it.
And when it gets to the top, it just grabs the light and, you know, snuffs it out in his fist.
Awesome. Like, that's really cool.
Yeah, that would be awesome,
what
right?
What a fun way to begin.
Totally. And I also kind of like the idea of this this villain. They should be like vaguely humanoid, but they should have the ability to like change their shape, right?
Definitely.
So in the same way as when a creature is out in the darkness, you can't quite see what they look like. Mm-hmm. You never quite have a sense of what this villain is, what they're shaped like. So they capture that unknown.
I love that.
In their, you know, own physical form.
I feel like to kind of play off of the fear of the dark thing too, I think anyone who looks at it, they see something different that relates to their innermost fears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, of course. Like yeah. a boggart or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. So it'll kind of like take on sort of that shape. Like if
That's
you're
cool.
like, man, I hope I don't see a bear out here. You're going to see a big bear like shadow of him.
Of course.
Yeah.
I think that would be an interesting power that they can kind of see into the hearts and minds of those they come across. They can look at you and immediately understand, I know what is scary to you. And
yeah.
I have power over you in that way. That's
yeah.
like their greatest skill.
Yeah. I like that a lot. One thing I'm thinking about too with our earlier idea of someone getting infected with a fear of the darkness.
Yes.
I feel like that is a good thing to kind of establish as it's almost like a disease. Like, cause you said that this has happened
yeah, okay.
for a few years now.
Yeah.
And certain people, like if you, like maybe there's like meditation you can do to stave off the fear of the dark.
Yeah. Okay.
But if you don't do that, then it will seep into you and into your brain and your
yeah,
mind.
Okay.
And so people who are not constantly or regularly, you know, doing this meditation or something like that,
yeah.
they will succumb to the fear of the darkness and the madness.
I like that.
Yeah.
So there's just this sort of nationless army of people who have lost their minds that, you know, they're kind of just waiting for that code word where they all spring into action and start serving this, you know, this beast of darkness.
I like it.
Whatever. That would be really cool.
Yeah.
I think something that would be really cool when you are confronting this creature is that to kind of prevent metagaming, right? Because like a serious problem in D&D a lot of the times, you know, 5e has been out for a while. D&D has been out for decades, right? So a lot of players they've kind of seen it all. They're familiar with when they see a red dragon, they know, okay, they've got this many attacks. They've got a cone of what, you know, they're weak to this. They've got a cone of fire they can breathe on me, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes it can be kind of hard to catch players off guard like that if they're experienced D&D players. Something that would be cool about this enemy is that because they take on a different form to anyone that, you know, that sees them, because they can take on the form of their greatest fear, they would have either as like an illusory thing or as an actual shape changing thing, anyone who confronts them, they fight them assuming that they are that thing they're seeing, right? Mm-hmm. So even in the same combat, maybe you're afraid of bears, like you said, and I'm afraid of wolves. So when I go to swing and hit him, he reacts in the way that a wolf would react. Mm-hmm. And when you go to swing and hit him, he reacts in the way that a bear would react. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of this like, you know, ever changing. You can't really say, well, we know he's weak against this, or we know she's weak against that, or we know that, you know, they have this ability or that ability. It's constantly in flux, which, you know, kind of makes it a much more challenging foe. I think this would have to be a really high challenge rating, you know, like a level 10 party or something like that would be required to do this. This wouldn't be, you know, if you did this as a one shot, you'd have to start your characters really high level or mm-hmm. have this be kind of the culmination of an adventure. We yeah. are going pretty big with this, I think.
Yeah. I think that's nice though, because it's open for adaptation.
Yeah.
You can apply
sure.
it to your game, or you can say, I kind of want to start with what we've described.
Yeah. Maybe the first kind of level adventures are going out and finding these shades or these, you know, people who have gone mad after being afflicted with the darkness and either cleansing them or killing them in like a holy crusade or something. You know, if you have
yeah.
a group of paladins, you know, you'd maybe say, we have to snuff out the darkness wherever we find it. Anyone who's been touched, we have to kill them.
Yeah.
You know, that would be cool.
I think ever since our villain has extinguished the sun, now I'm thinking a lot of like Castlevania, the TV show.
Yes.
And it also does sort of like a time jump where after Dracula first attacked that town, and now all these demons are like running wild across the countryside and killing like different villages and things like that. And so I like the idea that, yes, all these dark beasts have risen from the depths and are now moving in hordes across the land.
Absolutely.
And so that's something you also have to deal with and worry about. And I have an image in my mind, and I don't know if you can introduce this into a game, but I just love the idea of like someone like maybe casting a like a beam of light spell or something, and it shoots out into the darkness, and all around it are these shadowy things like snapping at the light, and they're all like, they're recoiling because they can't enter that beam, but they're there and they're growling and snarling and being like,
it makes me think of in Princess Mononoke. I've done the trifecta this week here. I've talked about I briefly talked about Lord of the Rings, I talked about Dark Souls, now we're talking about a Ghibli film.
Somebody just got bingo.
Somebody just got bingo here. But in Mononoke, when they throw a rock at all the apes and they kind of like all crawl away from it. I think that's so cool. In the same way, they kind of like scatter away from that sound or from, you know, from the light or whatever.
Yeah, very creepy. Really cool. I love that.
Something that I think Castlevania has done really well in the past, actually, this makes me think of in Castlevania 2 on the NES, so like way back in the 80s, the game had a day and night cycle, which was like, you know, revolutionary for the time. And during the daytime, the enemies were much weaker and you could just kind of like power through them. And then after a certain time passed in real time, it would always turn to night and this little dialogue box would come up, and it's so ominous and spooky. It would come up and say, "What a terrible night for a curse."
Ooh.
And then it would be nighttime for, you know, 5 minutes and all the enemies are way stronger. And there's certain things where you have to do them in the daytime and certain things where you have to do them in the nighttime. And you go to, you know, when you go to like a city, for example, if it's during the day, all the people walking around are just friendly. There's merchants you can, you know, talk to. There's always like a quest giver, like a, you know, a person you can buy things from, whatever. And then at night, it's just monsters roaming the city.
Very cool.
Which I love that. What a terrible night for a curse.
That's really good.
I think that's such a, it's a very, very well, it's so punchy, you know, it's a very simple thing, but you get it. When you see that dialogue pop up, you're like, oh shit.
Nice.
What's going to happen here?
I love the idea. Now that we're talking about Castlevania, I feel like vampires have come out of the woodwork.
Oh, absolutely.
Like people who you never knew were vampires before, they're like, guess what? It's me. I'm a vampire. Have been all along. Ha-ha.
Which is weird because splinters are probably really dangerous for vampires. They should be aware of, you know, living in woodwork.
Lame. Yeah, no, I think there's definitely way more vampires you have to worry about, way more werewolves and just like creatures of the night, things like that.
Absolutely. All of these things have risen in power since then.
Exactly. So, well, you know, it would be really cool if we're like kind of establishing this world, because like, let's go with this idea that it has been several years since the sun was removed.
Yeah.
I like that, you know, if there was that overarching like narration that would kind of establish the setting that you're in now, something in the narration would go over about how over this time, different leaders of classes of dark creatures have risen and kind of taken over and built their own capitals.
Yeah,
so there's like a vampire capital that has built up since the sun was taken away. And there's a city of the undead that is slowly growing growing. The more that people die, they often, the dead will reanimate and flock to that city.
Anyone who dies near there, like it just, they become part of the city immediately. So it's kind of creeping outwards.
So I like the idea that you'd be like, while doing this journey, you say, okay, well, we have to go to Werewolf Town if we want to solve this.
Yeah.
And so you have to make a quest over to Werewolf Town and
I love
like that.
And you know what? I love the idea too of now that these creatures of the night are sort of in control, maybe they become a little bit more like civilized almost. And so it's not necessarily that they're just these mindless killing machines. They've kind of evolved now, right? So the, you know, all the werewolves would, you know, they're like smart hulks now, right?
Yeah.
Where they're able to kind of in their werewolf form, which they can stay in constantly now. Mm-hmm. They've gained more control over that form and they've become these, you know, slightly more regal. Maybe they view themselves as like nobility because they say, we've transcended the world of man and beast. We've become greater than either could hope to be on their own.
I love that
would be super cool. You know, go find a bunch of pretentious werewolves who think that they're like, you know, they are the apex predators, but they also think they're like the apex of everything.
Dude, very cool.
That would be awesome, awesome, awesome.
I, of course, this is open to anybody to throw whatever characters you want into it.
Yeah.
But I love the idea that for whatever reason, like, what if you were building a party, you could take one person from each town. So you have a vampire, a werewolf, an undead.
God.
And for whatever reason, these friends have decided, you know what, this has been great for us in our communities, but we have to return things back to the way that they were before. Like, and you can come up with the reason why that is.
Totally. But, you know, maybe they're all at each other's throats now or something. They're more of them are dying than ever before because they're all so much more powerful and they're able to kill each other more effectively than humans ever could. So they want to say, we want to, you know, things were bad with humans, but at least we were, you know, less of us were dying. Let's maybe bring things back to the way they were.
Interesting. Yeah. But I just like that idea that the people from the bad guys team are the ones who are like, we have to stop this.
What? Okay. I love the idea of this now. You know, we said maybe this could be like the culmination of a big group, but you know, the two ways I could see approaching this is either do it as a one shot and say, every single one of you has to pick, you either be a vampire, be undead, be a skeleton, be, you know, be a werewolf, be whatever, right? And your party is made up of these. Or I think this would be a really fun thing if you want to really play the long game.
Everyone gets infected?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Play, you know, play this as like a year-long game. And over the course of that year, one by one, members of your party are getting turned into a vampire or turned into the undead or turned into a werewolf.
I really love that.
Yeah.
That's great.
That would be so fun.
And you know what? That makes a lot of sense because at the beginning of their quest, they were all humans.
Yes.
And they're like, we have to bring back the sun. But at the end of their quest, they're all creatures of the night. And they're like,
do we want to do this?
Will we die if we bring back the sun like we originally set out to do?
Maybe they feel like maybe they were all turned in the darkness, right? And so they feel if they bring the sun back, it will restore them to their original form. And that makes perfect sense because it would be somebody who used to be human and wants to be human again, wanting to return things to the status quo rather than having to come up with some weird justification as to why vampires who are now, you know, at the top of the food chain want humans to be, you know, want to be under the thumb of a bunch of humans again, right?
Yeah.
I think that's super cool. And
I like
it's just
that a lot.
This one, you know, great, you know, the Night Master or something like that kind of is kicking off all of this.
And I think it'd be really cool, like when they meet this individual, the evil person would say to them, it's like, I have given you so much. I've given you a world where you can now freely move about. Why would you want to put yourself back into the cage of like sun and daylight? Yeah. Why would you want to do that?
Because you gave me nothing. All you did was take from me. And then you'd stab him in the heart with a silver sword. Yeah.
And you flash a million lights on him. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. This is a really, really cool build up to this, I think. So let's maybe talk a little bit about, let's flesh out this enemy like a little bit more. Let's talk about maybe some of their abilities are and then wrap this up and just sort of release this to our listeners here and see what they can do. So, you know, when you actually get to that final confrontation, where is this, you know, this creature? What are they doing? Like, you know, now that they've succeeded in bringing about the night, like, what do? Do they just travel from town to town, you know, being thanked by all of the zombies and werewolves and stuff, or what?
I picture it like a great rolling cloud of darkness that just like moves across the land and sometimes like slithers around places.
I don't
see it as like an individual. I kind of feel like, the way that you have to, because it can move so freely in the darkness it's created, you'd have to trap it like by maybe reigniting like the lighthouses or something.
Yeah.
And then you can like,
then they become vulnerable.
Yeah, trap it in a thing, and then you could actually confront it and then have this final showdown.
So these are sort of the stages of this adventure, right? Is one, develop some kind of magic that can protect you from the darkness as you, you know, roam around, right? Or that can help you control the type of darkness that you're exposed to, right? Because you can't be exposed to the light either because you're a werewolf or a vampire or whatever also. So you need to say, we need a cleric that can come on and say, I can kind of play both sides of the field. I can help you control the light that, you know, that impacts you, right? Mm-hmm. So either, you know, either having like a magical bubble around you or something, or curing yourself of this weakness against the light, and then finding out where, you know, where this monster is kind of staying, where their home base is, basically, finding a way to get there, and then finding a way to relight the lighthouse.
Yeah, definitely. I like it a lot.
Cool. So I think then, that's a really cool sort of stepping off point for this.
Yeah.
I love the idea that they can shift and change and they can confuse, you know, people by taking away their senses and things like that. Even as powerful as all of these creatures of the night have become, he has everything that any one of them has.
Or
and,
she.
And then
or
some.
They.
He or she. Or they. Or, yeah, exactly.
I think it's like, a they.
I think it, yeah, I think
it's
it would
like
definitely
it
become a
they. It is darkness.
And I think if they are a culmination of all of these different things, it makes sense that it's this sort of, everything is included, mm-hmm. right? I like the idea of that any person could look at them and they could see themselves, you know, reflected in the shadows, or they could see something totally foreign and alien to them. It can be whatever they want or whatever they don't want.
That makes me think of Tim Curry gives this cool monologue at the end of the movie Legend after Jack, who's played by
Tom Cruise,
yeah. Yes, defeats him, and he's about to, like, he's getting blasted with all of this natural light, and he's like hurling these curses at Jack, and he says to him, he's like, I am within you, boy. I am part of you. I am part of all of you. Like, what is light without darkness? What are you without me?
I love that.
And then, like, later he gets a unicorn horn in his gut and it kills him.
An enemy that is necessary is so cool. You know, if they are like a prime elemental force, and it's not necessarily that you want to destroy them, but you have to say, you have too much power right now and we got to do something about that. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's really interesting.
Yeah.
You lock them away or lock their power away. You know, when Hades is cast back to the underworld, Hades
isn't gone.
Give us
back the sun, you bitch.
Yeah. Exactly. I think that's so interesting. You're just, you're, like we said, returning things to the status quo, not wiping the slate clean.
Yeah.
That's so fun. So
what I love about those things too, like the reference you gave about sending Hades back to the underworld, the idea that you can't kill a being like this, that it will always exist.
Yeah.
It's fun because it leaves the imagination and the possibility open for a follow-up, because they're going to be down there in their little dark prison, like coming up with a new way to get revenge
exactly.
and come back someday. They're like, I will return. And it will be 10 times worse than ever before.
They're going to come back for your children's children's children, just
exactly.
like Captain Hook.
Yes.
they're going to wreak havoc on your family line, basically. I think that's awesome. Well, and also in the same way as Castlevania, I mean, the Belmont family is like this, you know, divine lineage of vampire hunters or whatever. And I think that's cool. I love the way that history can play into that. How fun would that be to play an adventuring party that solves this problem, right? Mm-hmm. You finish that. That's the grand finale of your campaign. And then, you know, your next session, everyone rolls a character that is a descendant of those original characters.
Oh, that's fun.
And so all of those deeds are kind of talked about, and they're all got a little bit of a chip on their shoulder because they have to live up to the expectations of that people had for their, you know, their grandmother, their grandfather, or, you know, whatever. I think that would be a cool thing to do.
That's awesome.
Start a bunch of characters with, like I said, a huge chip on their shoulder with a bunch of neuroses of like, I'll never be as good as my dad or my mom.
Well, you know what would be interesting too is the idea that maybe generations and generations go by and it is not necessarily passed down in their family that their ancestors did this. Maybe the people that they don't know that they have this in their family past.
Yes.
And so this darkness, who is so angry and has been trapped forever, finally gets out and it looks to find the people who trapped them, maybe not knowing how long the time has gone by, and they find the descendants of those people. And so it just shows up there and it's like, guess what? I'm going to kick your ass. And it's like, I didn't do anything to you.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm like a baker. What do you
right?
want?
And it's like, well, now you're my prisoner. And like
in
all
the
this other
same
stuff.
Same way as, again, Captain Hook and Peter Banning, where he's like, I'm a lawyer. What do you want? Like, I don't know what's I don't know what
it
you're talking
so
about.
It just so happens I am a lawyer.
Kill the lawyer! So if you guys want to go bangarang on your adventuring parties here, I think this is a really fun thing to subject them to.
Definitely.
And to plan this out is something that, you know, can span several campaigns and several characters. I think that would be so cool. And that's a very big ask, right? Not everybody necessarily has a group that you actually finish things, right? I mean, we have so many campaigns going that are possibly never going to finish. So,
probably.
Yeah, we wish you luck with this. And I'm sorry if we've given you a gift that you'll never be able to actually use. But I really hope that this is something that you guys find useful, and we would love to hear what you do with this. If you have more ideas about how this shadowy figure can, you know, play a part in your existing world, or if you have, you know, changes to the way they bring about this endless darkness, or, you know, how the light is returned to the land. We want to hear all about that. And if you want to share that with us, there are two places you can go. Piper, what are they?
One is Twitter. You can tweet us and follow us if you like. We love that. We are at WorldForgePod at Twitter.
Absolutely.
You can also reach us by email. We are WorldForgePod@gmail.com.
Absolutely. And if you want to go ahead and support the show outside of just sharing your lovely ideas, your fan art, your fan fiction, your fan mail, whatever, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or your podcasting app of choice. It really, really does a lot to help get our podcast in front of new listeners. A 5-star review and a nice little comment really is just tremendous to us, and it's totally free. So consider that, consider sharing with a friend, and we are just so tremendously appreciative of all of that always. So
absolutely,
we will thank you in advance for, for going and doing that. But now I think it's time to hop on over to the next section of the show, which is
the rec room.
Yay. And I've got a cool recommendation this week, actually, talking about, you know, all this kind of fun undead stuff here made me think of a board game that I think is really, really cool. It's a really fun kind of asymmetrical semi-cooperative board game called Dead of Winter. And it's like a zombie survival scenario based game where there's like 50 different scenarios or something you can play out. And each scenario gives everyone playing different goals. And essentially what you do is you travel around to these different areas of the map. And every time you travel, you're exposed to, you know, zombie bites, and each character has different abilities that can help safeguard them from zombie bites, or they can make it so you gather more resources when you go and you travel places. And if you die, you end up, you know, getting turned into a zombie. And then aside from the fact that there's one goal that everyone has that you have to accomplish to win together, every character also has their own goals mm-hmm. that if they accomplish those, they win regardless of whatever, you know, happens to everybody else. So it might be that your goal is now sabotage everybody and make sure that I'm the only one that wins and I get away with, you know, all the fuel and I can ride off into the sunset. Or you might have a goal that says, you know, go get a bunch of, you know, medicine or whatever, get a bunch of food and share it with everyone. Have this much food in the stockpile at any given time. I think that's really cool. And you can play it with, you know, a vastly different number of people. You can have like 4-player games that are totally different than 8-player games. The way that you kind of interact with each other, there's sort of like a bluffing aspect to it. There's a lot of really fun, complex interplay between players. And it's different every time because there's so many scenarios. So I definitely, definitely recommend that. Dead of Winter, it's very, very fun. So
yeah. And it's one of those long strategy games that I actually enjoyed doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Normally, sometimes those are a bit too much of a commitment for me, but that was pretty fun. I liked it.
It tends to move pretty quick. It's also the kind of thing where it takes like an hour to set up and then you play for like 2 hours or whatever. So it's a big commitment to get a game started. But once you do and everybody kind of understands the rules, I think it moves pretty fast. Because there's different things that everybody does on a round, and there's only like a finite number of rounds. There's like 4 or 5 rounds in the game or something like that. So it goes at a bit of a clip once you start playing. So
yeah,
that's our big recommendation this week. Piper, mm-hmm. anything else that you want to share with our lovely listeners before we get going here?
Go watch Castlevania.
Yes.
Talking about that a lot has made me kind of want to revisit it. I've gone most way through season 1, maybe into season 2 on Netflix, but I enjoyed it. It's
absolutely
pretty good.
Yeah, I've actually yet to see it, so I would be happy to revisit it with you. I think you watched it without me, and then I was like, oh, I kind of want to watch that too, and you're like, I don't want to watch it again yet. I haven't gone back and watched it yet.
It is a little violent, and at points it feels a little slow, and my favorite thing is the romance between Dracula and his wife, but that's only really seen now and then in occasional flashbacks.
That is so classic Piper, though.
I know! It's so cute! And I do love the way that he, sought revenge for them killing his beautiful wife by, unleashing hell upon mankind. It's so romantic.
Exactly. That's all anybody wants is somebody who will unleash hell on mankind on their behalf.
Exactly. I think the one thing that bummed me out about the show is after he did that first cool thing, he then just sat around and moped in his castle forever.
Yeah, for sure.
And people had to come in and they're like, hey, yo, Dracula, gonna do something cool or what? And he's like, my wife's dead. And we're like, we know. Like,
you've been moping for 400 years, Dracula. Okay, you're gonna go bite some necks or what?
Yeah. I don't know. I want to see more action from him. But maybe it comes later and I just haven't gotten those parts yet.
Yeah, maybe. I am familiar with the Castlevania games. I've played a lot of the games, so I know a lot of the sort of tropes and I know what kind of goes on in that world. So I guess I'll piggyback onto that recommendation and say, if you liked Castlevania the series and you haven't played any of the games, go play some of the games.
Yeah.
Definitely, definitely. They're mostly pretty good. There's a few stinkers in there, mm-hmm. but any of the Game Boy Advance ones are phenomenal, and any of the Super Nintendo ones are phenomenal. So I recommend any of those to you. So those are our recommendations for you this week.
Yeah.
And with that, I think we are able to bring this episode to a close.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Thank you guys so much for joining us for Fright Forge Season 2.
Yes.
Episode 2. we will be back next week with another horrifying terror to
absolutely.
Really rattle your bones.
Yeah, we're really excited. But these episodes are so fun for us. So we are glad that we get a positive response. So
yeah.
Thank you again for listening, listeners. We love you, and we will see you again very soon.
Uh-huh. Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you.